The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Chris DeGaulle Show podcast.
Okay, guys, let's just rip. And Chris DeGaulle.
Chris DeGaulle. Chris, thanks for being with me tonight.
Chris DeGaulle.
I'm joined now by Chris DeGaulle.
Now, he puts the broad in broadband. It's Chris DeGaulle.
The Chris DeGaulle podcast is presented by USMedicalPlan.com. Save big money monthly and get better health coverage at USMedicalPlan.com.
It's Tuesday, the 7th day of February, and I thank you so much for downloading the Chris DeGaulle Show podcast. I got some cool news that we're going to have Dick Vermeil, the former coach of the Philadelphia Eagles and the former coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to give us a Super Bowl preview this week, so that's coming up on the show not to miss. Tonight is the Incredible Husks State of the Union Address. I will be responding to that on video. My plan is tonight to watch that, give live commentary during it, and then because I don't have the means to do this live on the Harumph Society, I wish we did, but it Substack just doesn't allow for it now. They will eventually. But for you Harumphers, if you're a Harumph Society member and you want to know my reaction and my thoughts to the State of the Union, or if you're not and you're interested, today's a good day to subscribe to the Harumph Society, because tonight I'm going to post my immediate video reaction to the State of the Union first to the Harumph Society tonight. All right, so you can go to the Harumph Society by going to chrisstegall.com and signing up there, or if you're already a Substack user, look up the Harumph Society. That's with two R's, H-A-R-R-U-M-P-H, and watch the video when I post it. We will have a complete reaction to that, and then, of course, I'm sure I'll probably write some more about it. I'm not sure yet. Maybe if I'm already doing the reaction, I may write something else in the monologue, but really have enjoyed it. It's just growing by leaps and bounds. I'm so grateful to you for supporting it. And the commentary and comments from you in the comments section from you Harumphers who are subscribers is so cool. It's so cool to see civilized people having civil conversations, even civil disagreements. No trolls. You'll love it. I hope it's useful and entertaining and informative to you. 3 days a week we publish that thing, in addition to special stuff. And I can tell you that we have some events coming up. I have some events coming up, certainly in Philadelphia, at least two that I know of this year, excuse me, as well as some things I'm thinking about working on in Kansas City, but I don't quite know yet. But the goal of the Harumph Society is to give you exclusive access to that stuff first before we sell it to the general public on the radio too, all right? So, and you podcasters, same deal. So go to the Harumph Society and sign up. I also want to say quickly some shopkeeping. I am thrilled by your embrace of this podcast. Thank you for downloading it and giving it a 5-star review. And thank you to the sponsors who make it hum. I welcome today a dear friend of mine. And I have to say this about him off the top because there are legal reasons why. He's a financial advisor. And so when I actually do the formal commercial for Jason Perrett, who you're going to hear from today, Jason's firm is Eagle Wealth Planning. He's a great personal friend of mine. He is a great Christian man, and he is in the financial services industry. He helps people like you and me either get started or plan for or work with money while in retirement. He's the best. And so he's a brand new sponsor to the show, Eagle Wealth Planning, and I'm going to talk more about him later, but I have to stick to the script when I do it. So I said, well, fine. If I'm not technically doing the advertisement, then I can tell people about you outside the commercial, the official commercial announcement. So I welcome Jason Perrett and Eagle Wealth Planning. And I know if you need some help with your finances or you haven't even really gotten started or you're not sure where to start, this guy is super nice. And it doesn't matter where you live in the country, Jason can help you over the phone if you go to his website, which I'll tell you more about coming up. Okay. But the first guy I want to tell you about is also, he's become a great friend of mine over the last few months because he's now officially the title sponsor of this show. He's the guy that pays to keep the lights on. John Ruhlman, usmedicalplan.com is his website, usmedicalplan.com. Speaking of finances, Look, I work with people who can help you get on track and save you some money because it's tight. It's, you know, we're going to talk with Steve Moore today. Like, people are trying to save money where they can. I know that's the case at my house. And when I have friends tell me that they're paying thousands of dollars a month out of pocket for their own health insurance premiums, it's that can be devastating. I'm fortunate that I have an employer-provided health insurance plan. It's still an expensive monthly cost. I mean, I do a health savings account to kind of keep premiums low. But if you're buying it out of pocket, it can be – I don't have to tell you. I mean, if you own a small business, you're insuring your employees, or you just buy your own health insurance because you're self-employed for your family, it can, and heaven forbid you have somebody with special needs. Or maybe you're elderly, senior, you're on a fixed income, and you know you have Social Security and maybe Medicare, but you need a supplemental plan. That can be a bite out of your monthly expenses. The thing is, John Ruhlman at usmedicalplan.com has access to 80 different insurers, 80, 80, in addition to working with Obamacare. He knows how to navigate that. A universe of insurance policies and possibilities to get your premiums low and still give you the same coverage. You've got to work with him. If you're trying to save a buck, this is the fastest way to do it. I'm telling you, hundreds, maybe thousands a month. Seriously. 877-410-4321. 877-410-4321 or usmedicalplan.com. Call John Ruhlman today and start saving on health insurance premiums. I'm just reading all these headlines about the big expectations for Biden's State of the Union tonight. Oh, he's got some big challenges in front of him. You mean like the entirety of the country doesn't trust him? That he looks like a completely failed, weak, unaccomplished, doddering old moron? You, that's the lift he has tonight? You're right. It's a big lift, everybody. But the media trying to build this up like you're going to be tuned in, gripped, to see what the husk has to say. Lucky for you that I am going to offer a State of the Union rebuttal of sorts of my own at the Harumph Society tonight. So I will have a complete reaction as it unfolds after it happens on the Harumph Society tonight. I can't go live yet. We're not to a place where I'm going to go live with it. But immediately following the Harumph Society, at the Harumph Society, I will have my first reaction before I even get here tomorrow. So if you're not a Harumph Society member yet, go there today. Subscribe. It's a measly little $5 a month. And I think these are the kinds of moments that are best suited for Harumphers. It's my opportunity to give you my first blush take on things as it unfolds. And then most of all, most importantly, it's my chance to hear directly from you and you guys to interact and discuss the speech. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's offering the rebuttal, looking forward to it. So that's tonight at the Harumph Society. Go there and check it out right now. I'm linked at chrisstegall.com, or if you're already on Substack, look for the Harumph Society and get signed up. Your State of the Union. Biden to discuss strategy to reassert America's leadership on world stage. America's leadership on the world stage. I think the balloon did more for our standing on the world stage than anything Biden can say tonight. President Joe Biden set to deliver his second State of the Union address tonight, in which he is expected to explain his strategy to reassert America's leadership around the world. What a joke. Nobody in this country thinks our leadership standing in the world is stronger with the husk. Nobody. There is no serious person. And even people that pretend to be Biden partisans, if you hook them up to a lie detector, they'd fail. A White House official telling Fox News. Since last year's address, his administration has been faced with a growing migrant surge at the border. Aw, poor fella. Yeah, he's been faced with a growing migrant surge. Nothing he can do about it, right? He's a hapless victim. Gasoline prices hit an all-time record. Aw, poor guy. Doggone it, it happened to him again. Every turn, the husk just wakes up trying to be a good guy, have some ice cream, and the next thing you know, migrants come flowing through the border. Gas prices shoot through the sky. Chinese balloons float through the sky. He's the poor guy. How does this stuff keep happening to him? Don't you feel sorry for the old husk? Inflation reached a 40-year high. How do these things keep happening to him? Continuing supply chain issues led to a nationwide shortage of baby formula. Yeah, which I thought he'd cured by ordering more from Ukraine or some such. No? Pete Buttigieg wasn't on the case? Poor people. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has escalated with no end in sight. Doggone it. All this stuff, every one of these in this list. It's an amazing paragraph, actually. Of course, I'm being sarcastic. Every single one of these is because he's president. Listen to me. Every single one of these is because of who's president. Let me go over that list one more time from Fox News. Growing migrant surge at the southern border. His fault. Gasoline prices hit an all-time record. His fault. Inflation reached a 40-year high. His fault. You know what? I'll give him partial credit for inflation hitting a 40-year high. Republicans spent money like drunken sailors, too. Okay, so I'll be bipartisan and generous and say big government spending is not exclusively Biden. But Biden has been in government since it was founded in 1776, so he is certainly one of the biggest figureheads of government and government spending. All right, so his fault. Continuing supply chain issues. His fault. Supply chain shortages. Baby formula. His fault. And then, of course, the pièce de résistance, Russia's incursion into Ukraine and a balloon flying over our airspace. All of those, his fault. Global leadership sticking their middle fingers in the air saying, we're not scared of you, you stupid old man. We're going to do what we damn well please, including invade your airspace, and you're not going to do anything about it. And then we're going to have the temerity to act like you have attacked us, or we've been aggrieved because you shot our thing out of the sky over your skies. That's chutzpah. You believe the Chinese are actually sitting around talking about how they might have to deal with us? Because we shot their balloon out of our airspace. Right. They're going to deal with us. Well, look, in ordinary times, I'd laugh that off. But because this guy's president of the United States, I'm not so sure. Anyway, tonight the husk is going to give the State of the Union and try to reassure everyone that we've reasserted America's leadership in the world. Sure. Operation Clean Sweep is on. There's another poll. I had two of them yesterday. Remember, all of these happened yesterday. After the show concluded, another one came out. So I led off with the Associated Press poll. 37%, just 37% of Democrats say they want Biden to seek a second term, down from 52%. In the weeks before last year's midterms. While Biden has trumpeted his legislative victories and ability to govern, the polls suggest relatively few U.S. adults give him high marks on either. Follow-up interviews with poll respondents suggest many believe the 80-year-old's ability is diminished, his gait, his coughing fits, his gaffes, and possibility that the world's most stressful job may be better suited to someone younger. 37% of Democrats, that's it, want him to seek a second term. And then again, the ABC News Washington Post poll. This one even more devastating than that. 6 in 10 say the president has not accomplished much. The poll finds 62% of Americans think Biden has accomplished not very much or little or nothing during his presidency. On many of Biden's signature initiatives, from improving the country's infrastructure to making electric vehicles more affordable to creating jobs, majorities of Americans say they don't believe he's made progress. ABC and Washington Post, of course, trying to prop him up. Look what he's done. He's making affordable plug-in cars. Nobody wants the damn plug-in cars, and they're not affordable. He's creating jobs. No, he's not. Tens of millions of jobs were vacated during COVID. Those jobs are just coming back online now. Improving the country's infrastructure. Well, majorities of Americans say they don't believe it. You may say it, but they don't believe it. And then from CNN yesterday, another stunner. This is all ahead of the Husk's State of the Union. Listen.
Well, I thought I had it here. Hang on just a second. Hang on. Stand by. Ah, yes. Here we go.
Poll. Are you worse off financially since the president took office? This is in the Washington Post ABC poll. That's the highest number they've been polling for 37 years. And 41% of Americans say they're worse off since the president took office. That's the old Ronald Reagan question, right? Right for re-election. Do you feel better off than you were 4 years ago? So
that's John King. Record number of people say they're worse off financially since Biden took office. Yeah, the husk is going to reassert America's leadership on the world stage. He can't reassert his own leadership in the United States. Over on the Chinese spy balloon story that should not be ignored, and I'm not forgetting. CNN, total miscalculation. China goes into crisis management mode on balloon fallout. Of course, CNN's got it covered from the Chinese perspective, and how can the Chinese spin it? As the new year got underway in China, hopes appeared to be running high that an easing of tensions with the United States could unfold in the months ahead. This could be written from the Chinese Politburo, these people. They write like they're Chinese spin doctors, which they probably are at CNN. Oh, China was so hopeful. Gosh, they started the new year wanting to get along so well, and then this crazy balloon went off course. Wink. China's foreign ministry expressed as much late last month when it said China would welcome a visit from Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, an expected visit that analysts said Beijing viewed as an opportunity to help strengthen its economy and repair fraught diplomatic ties. So when a high-altitude balloon from China carrying a payload the size of three coach buses, equipped with what American officials have described as surveillance equipment. Oh, and by the way, did you hear yesterday that now they're saying that that balloon may have been probably carrying explosives? Hello? Yeah, did you hear that? The Chinese spy balloon, this from the New York Post, that traversed U.S. airspace before being shot down over the weekend, roughly 200 feet tall, weighed thousands of pounds, and may have carried explosives meant for self-destruction. The since obliterated spycraft's payload was approximately the size of a regional jet airliner. The balloon assessment was up to 200 feet tall for an actual balloon. Blah, blah. The F-22 eventually shot it down. They're taking it off now to some FBI lab to surveil the pieces that divers are looking after. Somebody made the point to me yesterday on Twitter. They claim that if they shot it down, it would create something like a 7-mile debris field. And yet they're sending divers out to recover the, you know, whatever you want to call it, refuse remains, the debris. And that was sort of a good point. I had to kind of ruminate on what the tweet meant. And as I thought about it, I think I got the point. And the point is, if that was really the reason they didn't shoot that balloon down because of the debris field, it could be up to 7 miles long, that debris field. So you shoot it down over the ocean, and now you send out divers to retrieve parts of it. Now, look, I'm not saying it's impossible, but that's 7 miles of debris field over the ocean, and you're sending divers out to retrieve it. That seems like a healthy amount of real estate out in the open water to go out fishing for debris. Yeah, I don't, first of all, I just don't believe it. I don't believe that's the reason that was shot down over the water. And I don't, what's most amazing is, as Jack Keane said, they should have seen this coming as it hit the Aleutian Islands, totally undeveloped off the coast of Alaska. They should have seen it. And now we can't get a straight story over what they knew and when they knew it, or if they even saw it at all. And in fact, John Kirby yesterday, the beady-eyed little twerpy John Kirby that looks out of Central Casting from 1950, honey, I'm home, you know, with the perfectly coiffed hair and the pocket square and the tie clip. You know, he looks like he came from a rotary meeting in 1950, John Kirby, the tortoiseshell glasses. You know what he said yesterday? He said, hey, I'm not going to get into it. But just so you know, once when we got here, when we showed up at the gig, we learned that there's been a lot of spy balloons. We're not going to get into how we know, but that's what we learned. So, of course, the Trump administration has no recollection of this whatsoever. They have no knowledge of this whatsoever, I should say. They're completely calling out the Biden administration as making this up out of whole cloth, that it's not true. Ratcliffe is saying it's not true. Former director of national intelligence, Grinnell, who served in that interim capacity, says it's not true. Trump himself, of course, says it's not true. Pompeo has gone on record as the director of the CIA and FBI, Secretary of State. Not true. So they're all refuting it. And the Biden administration's official position is now, as it turns out, these balloons have been floating over our airspace for a while. We're just now finding out about it. Sure. So on top of all of that, they believe, they aren't saying with certainty, but they believe the potential for the balloon containing explosives is there. Which, if true, even more disconcerting that we let it just hover over our airspace for 7 days. China maintains the vessel, which was shot down by the United States over the Atlantic on Saturday. They maintain it was a weather balloon that was just thrown off course. And it has shown signs of both being caught off guard by the incident and wanting to stem the political damage, analysts say, not only framing the situation as the result of factors beyond its control, but also offering a rare expression of regret over it in a statement Friday. Of course. The other hot take on this balloon is, we scrambled whatever they were intercepting. No way they could spy on us. They could. So the thing was able to freely move and navigate over the continental United States, but they had the controls to make sure that whatever equipment was on the balloon wasn't working, couldn't work, not possible, because we scrambled it. Okay, and if there were explosives on it, and they know that we're about to blow it out of the sky, and they know that we're going to go retrieve it, then why wouldn't they blow it up themselves? Of course, there's 1,000 more questions than there are answers. And the biggest answer is, of course, that I'm sad to say, our government hasn't been honest with us. They're not being transparent. They're not telling us the truth about what that balloon was, when they saw it, when they decided to shoot it down, if they were even going to shoot it down, why they waited for 7 days to do it. These are all legitimate questions that every American should demand. And it was the cherry on top for this incredible husk we're pretending is president. He goes into a State of the Union tonight after a Chinese spy balloon has hovered over the continent for 7 days. It's like it's the exclamation point on weakness and failure. What the hell could he possibly say? Yeah, that's right. I was a tough guy. I ordered it shot down and they told me no. Wow, really? Because that's also the official line. Tough guy said, shoot it down, and they said, nope, not doing it. Well, all right, whatever you think. Not how it goes in the movies, is it? When the commander-in-chief orders something? I mean, the dramatic scene may play out where the joint chief says, sir, that's crazy. If we do that, X will happen, right? And the president pounds his fist on the, damn it, I said do it! Right? That's the way it works in the movies. The husk? You think we ought to shoot it down? No, sir, I wouldn't advise it. I think we ought to shoot it down. I'm getting a lot of bad attention. It's been on TV for like 4 days now. We should shoot it down. We're not shooting it down, sir. All right. I'll have butterscotch tonight instead of chocolate. It's so weak. So embarrassing. I'm actually looking forward to seeing how he tries to spin this tonight. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. Okay, as you look back on 2022, and now here we are smack in 2023, are you ready to review your financial situation and your financial goals to make sure you're on track for the future? Well, let me tell you, Jason Perrett, financial advisor at Eagle Wealth Planning, has a passion for providing financial services to those who are looking to pursue financial independence. Jason focuses on producing consistent results for his clients based on their unique financial goals and needs. His main objective is to help his clients pursue each and every one of their goals. He's a fiduciary,
And so he's dedicated to providing clients with complete wealth management and investment services, along with highly personalized professional assistance. Jason can help accomplished entrepreneurs, professionals, retirees, even young people who are just trying to get started pursuing a life of long-term financial independence. Jason will regularly revisit your goals, assess your risk tolerance, and strategies to provide you with a high level of service at the same time. You can call him today, and I hope that you will. Pick up the phone, 816-394-8117. That's 816-394-8117. Jason Perrett, financial advisor at Eagle Wealth Planning, 1717 Paddock Drive, Kearney, Missouri. Or you can send Jason an email, and you can do that. His phone number, his email, all on his website, EagleWealthPlanning.com. EagleWealthPlanning.com. It's linked at ChrisStegall.com, and everything's up there. His phone number, his website, his email address, his physical address I just shared with you, EagleWealthPlanning.com. Have a discussion about the way forward with your financial services. Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and a registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Mark Milley, Joint Chiefs Chair. Take a little flashback, listen, to something he said in an interview. This aired on C-SPAN back in 2015. He was the Army's chief of staff at that time.
As you alluded to in the previous question, China's not an enemy. And I think that's important for people to clearly understand. China is a rising power. China has been a rising power since Deng Xiaoping in 79. And they've been clicking off at 10% growth for almost 30 years, and they dropped down to about 7% last year or two. And they'll probably drop again, and come into the range of normalcy and 3 to 5% growth. But that's still significant economic growth. And there's been a really large historic change from a North Atlantic-based global economy to now it's proceeding to be a North Pacific-based global economy. So with respect to China, what normally happens historically, it's not in all cases, but in most cases, where you have economic growth of that magnitude typically follows military power. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a significant increase in Chinese military capabilities over the last 10 to 20 years. And they are going to develop themselves and are developing themselves into a great power.
Right.
That is not to say, however, that they are an enemy.
Yeah, I wanted to double down on that. Not an enemy. Just to be clear, not an enemy. Said that twice. Started and stopped with, just to be clear, China not an enemy. We bring in Breitbart's deputy national security expert and analyst at Breitbart. He's John Hayward, my friend, Doc Zero on Twitter, Doc_0. He's covered China extensively. He's studied and written about this subject extensively. So Mark Milley, then Secretary of the Army, now the Joint Chiefs Chair, has consistently held this point of view. And in fact, even said, John, famously, we were talking about this yesterday on the show, that if Trump did anything that seemed a little too wild-eyed for his tastes, he'd tip off China about Trump's movement. So this is a guy that clearly has sympathies with China, it seems to me, now as our Joint Chiefs Chair. So how do you read it all? Good morning.
Well, good morning. The latest mutation in this rapidly mutating and apparently false story from the Biden administration, where they claim there were three Chinese spy balloon overflights of the U.S. during the Trump administration, was that Milley said that he knew about it and didn't tell Trump because he was afraid he would overreact. That would be treason. That would be enough to put him in jail for the rest of his life if that was true. So, I mean, that is how far this nonsense is going. And I do think a lot of this is nonsense. I think this is all cover your ass stuff they're making up just to, make it look a little less embarrassing that this happened on Joe Biden's watch. They're just trying to muddy the waters. The White House press secretary's conference yesterday was one of the worst ones she ever gave, and that is Hall of Fame material right there. to say that it was her worst press conference is mind-boggling. But it was very clear during that conference that she had no information whatsoever to back up this claim that they're making, that we've had Chinese spy balloons all over the place, and this one just got noticed or something. I mean, it was clearly a BS story, and she wasn't prepared to peddle it, so she just had to wing it, and it's really embarrassing because she's not good at winging it.
Yeah, we knew. I've got some of this audio. let's play some of it here. Just start at the top. I've got a whole list of it. Number 41. This is Karine Jean-Pierre. How's it possible they've discovered three balloons, but nobody knew about it till now?
How is it possible that this administration discovered at least three previous balloons that flew over the U.S. under the previous administration, but Trump officials didn't know it was happening?
Yeah, so look, I think that, and we have talked about this before, about how when the PRC government surveillance balloons transited the continental U.S. briefly at least three times, as you just mentioned, during the president's prior administration, and once that we know of the beginning of this administration's, but never for this duration of time, as we know. This information was discovered prior to the administration left, but the intelligence community, as I said, is prepared to give briefings to key officials. But this is something that they were not aware of, as we've just laid out.
So this is remarkable. The claim now is we discovered, and Kirby said something similar, we discovered that there were balloons during the Trump era. But in fact, they did not know about it. Just a little more here, John. I don't mean to make you re-listen to this whole train wreck from yesterday, but for people that missed it, number 45 here, following up on this. So you're briefing Trump officials on this? What do you – listen to this.
We are prepared. The intelligence community is indeed prepared to offer key officials, as you were just laying out, from the Trump administration to on the briefings on this PRC surveillance program. We're not going to get into who are those key officials from here. I would refer you to the intelligence community on those logistics on when it's going to happen and who those key officials would be. But again, we are prepared. We are willing to have that conversation to do. The briefing, but just not going to get into the specifics of who.
This is quite a remarkable take from the weekend of Trump knew, everybody in the Trump administration knew. Of course, everyone in the Trump administration, including Trump himself, came out and said, that's ridiculous, we knew nothing. And then that evolved into, well, no, you didn't because we didn't tell you, but it was there and we'll brief you on it later. Huh?
I mean, how do you find a balloon flew there 3 or 4 years later? Do they leave tracks? Are they like deer? Is there like balloon scan in the sky that they followed? I mean, it's just preposterous on its face. And you can tell from this press conference, it's preposterous. It was a quickly cobbled together story. There's no reason to believe it's true. Absolutely none that I can see right now. And it sure does look like something they cobbled together to make themselves look better, which is a horrendous abuse of the U.S. national security apparatus. If they're using, you know, the national security people as clowns to cover up their embarrassing failure here, that seems actionable. That's something the Republicans need to investigate. If this turns out to be not true, then the House needs to investigate where the story came from. Right now, it looks like, you know, some single unnamed source in the Pentagon leaked it, and everybody else is just keeping quiet about it. This seems like something that needs to be looked into by the House.
Yeah, this is, you're right. The word treason is exactly right. I used coup yesterday because it seems to me that we could be very well watching one if, in fact, this doddering old moron that we're pretending is leading something gave the order to shoot it down on Wednesday, and they said, yeah, well, no, we're going to do it when we please. Then he later, I mean, there's real discrepancy over whether he even knew about this thing, when he knew about it, if, in fact, he demanded it be shot down or they did it on their own timetable. And again, if they knew about this and didn't tell him, he interestingly said, when I started to hear about it coming through Canadian airspace. Now, that's interesting because we know this entered our airspace over the Aleutian Islands. So even his answer about Canadian airspace suggests he wasn't told till late. I don't give him any excuses at all, Biden, but I do think it's highly probable that we have a Defense Department and people like Milley that feel that our presidents are on a need-to-know basis with this stuff. I actually do believe that's true. A shadow government, if you will.
Yep. And I think the other thing you can draw from all of this is in the Biden administration, you're right, Joe Biden himself is barely mentally capable. He's not making these decisions. Other people are. And it looks like the people doing this, making these decisions, are purely political creatures. They don't really know anything about national security. They don't really know anything about where we really stand with China. They're political animals. And they're looking at polls. And the polls over the weekend said there was this rising tide of disgust that Biden lets this balloon meander over the whole country at 30 miles an hour for days on end, and then so he finally shot it down. I mean, it was no more complicated than that, and you have to almost see the Chinese have a little bit of a point when they complained about shooting it down after it exited the continental United States. I mean, what did that accomplish? It gave Joe Biden's online legions of dunderheads something they could crow about and make Dark Brandon memes for 24 hours, and otherwise it served no purpose whatsoever.
And the stupid, like, they tell themselves, oh, no, we were really on a three-dimensional chess here. Well, you know what we were doing? We were spying on their spying. We were scrambling their signals so that they couldn't see anything, but we saw everything they were doing. I mean, it was like there was this deceptive turn of tables, and it was really a very strategic thing we were doing by letting it float. It's absurd.
Did it, at any point during this balloon debacle, do you recall hearing a single report of people on the ground looking up and seeing gigantic military electronic warfare planes orbiting the balloon? Because I don't remember hearing any of that. Those things are big. They're electronic warfare planes. They're like, you know, converted passenger jetliners. I don't remember anybody reporting anything like that.
I don't either. And with the naked eye, you could see the thing from the entire, you know, they've spun this thing every which way. They got to be dizzy by now. It was too high to do anything about it, was also another thing they said at one point, which also wasn't true.
And that was transparently false. I mean, the operating ceiling of the F-22 is well above the highest altitude recorded for this thing. So that was never remotely true. They stuck to the excuse that they didn't want to shoot it down over a populated area because debris could fall on somebody. And that, again, I could see as a political calculation. You know, one of Joe Biden's campaign people that makes all the decisions is saying, boy, if we shoot this thing down and that array underneath it winds up landing in somebody's backyard, this is going to be a huge political scandal. So we better not do that. And meanwhile, you just have to imagine the Chinese just laughing themselves sick, watching this confused reaction. If this was an effort to test our reaction, we obviously failed. And I worry that looking at the trajectory of that balloon, I think it might have been a test run for something like an EMP weapon. And if so, they now have to be satisfied that they can pretty much at will float an EMP device over the middle of the country and we won't stop it.
That's another great point and question that I had for you was, if China was watching our reaction, they had to have been very, very pleased. And to me, I kept saying, I don't mean to be redundant for the audience, but my point in the balloon was not that the balloon alarmed me. It didn't alarm me. It offended me deeply as an American. It was like a giant floating middle finger. Like if the Chinese had made a balloon of a middle finger and you know, filled it full of air, it was like a Macy's Day float, you know, down, taking it down 7th or 5th Avenue or whatever it is with, you know, guy wires tied to a big middle finger is what that felt like to me. Right?
Yeah, it's a power move. A power move. This is the kind of thing you do when you're convinced you're in charge and you know that the response is not going to hurt you in any way. I mean, after all, you just got away with unleashing a global pandemic and nothing really happened to you. So sure, you know, let's try some spy balloons. There's more of them. You know, there's a reported spy balloon. In fact, this morning, the Costa Rican government came out and said, yes, there was a Chinese spy balloon floating in our skies, and the Chinese have apologized for it. So, I mean, they really were operating multiple balloons over the North American continent during this debacle.
So tonight, the Husk has to give a State of the Union address, and I noted that yesterday there were two different devastating media polls, mainstream, Associated Press and Washington Post, ABC News poll. 6 in 10 Democrats, 6 in 10 Americans say they don't think Biden's accomplished much or anything at all, and a scant 30% of Democrats want to see him run for a second term. That's Associated Press and Washington Post polling. CNN reporting, you know, most Americans feel economically worse under Biden. Now this balloon thing on top of it, what in the world could this man possibly offer to the five people that are going to watch this thing tonight?
Well, this is what State of the Union is all about. You throw red meat to your partisans. So he'll announce another laundry list of irresponsible spending, which will be even bigger than the irresponsible spending we actually got. You know, and this time maybe some fiscal sanity will prevail and stop some of it. But he'll get all kinds of credit for really, really caring because he proposes $1 trillion for transgender athletics or whatever, you know, and everybody will just say, hey, he really cares. He's in tune. So, I mean, you're going to get a lot of that. That's what State of the Union always is. And he'll try to claim that everything's going great. He'll roll out some economic statistics that he likes, that his people have massaged and prepared for him. I don't know if you saw the picture. Somebody got a picture of his briefing notes for the State of the Union that was left on a lectern, and it's like one sentence per page. It's like a whole notebook, and each page of it is one sentence spelled out in really big letters with a lot of space between them so that he can read them, you know, with his malfunctioning cognitive apparatus. So, I mean, this is going to be another one of these deals where they just prop him up there like a puppet and let him go. But he'll come out and say, oh, unemployment is great or something, and, you know, that proves that everything's working. And maybe if the stock market's good that morning, he'll say the stock market is great. He'll find ways to try to spin it. And his partisans will take that input and they'll run with it. And you'll get a blizzard of his apologists in the media saying, wow, you know, Joe Biden really did a great job in that State of the Union. He really countered that narrative. We don't understand why people think the economy is bad. But, you know, then, like you said, there's the poll. Everybody knows the economy is bad. They personally are hurting. And they are not really in a mood to hear somebody say you're hallucinating these bad economic times you're living through.
So this is kind of a fun exercise. We know he's going to bring up the Memphis cops, right? The five black cops who beat the black guy to death. It's going to be a race thing. That's going to definitely come up, right? For sure.
Yep, systemic racism caused that. Even though the cops were black, they were pawns of white supremacy, we'll be told. And I'm pretty sure, you know, my money is you're going to hear him use the phrase stochastic terrorism or something very close to it. That's the left's new darling talking point that says we're all terrorists. If you don't agree with the Democrats, you're a terrorist. And he's going to try to use that talking point or something very close to it.
Will he go after McCarthy for kicking Ilhan Omar off her committee as being a bigot, xenophobe, perhaps sexist? Will that come up? Will he go directly at the Speaker of the House and the Republican leadership?
I only wonder if he'll pull his punch a bit there because she is so toxic. And if you start trying to defend her, then everybody who's not a fan will come out with all the anti-Semitic statements. And that's not really a place the Democratic Party wants to be right now. So I think he might go a little easy on that one.
He will definitely bring up Roe versus Wade and 40-50 years of constitutional rights to a woman's right to choose being stripped of them. And he's going to continue to fight valiantly. That comes up for sure.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And he'll promise to fix the Supreme Court. He'll basically say it was taken over by extremists and he's going to fix it. They're going to really hit that talking point because they think that's one of the things that saved them in the midterms. So they're not going to let that go.
Yeah. Those seem to be mine. Those are at least those two. It's definitely racist cops and abortion. He's got to hit those two. I wonder how long he lingers on the economy. I mean, yes, like you said, he'll tout how robust. He'll talk about lowering the deficit. They love to talk about lowering the deficit. That's his favorite line. Right?
Yeah. And he'll say, like, inflation is down or something, even though it isn't. It's still sky high compared to what it was when you took office. But maybe it went down by 1%. It increased 1% less or something last month. So he'll crow that inflation is better on his watch. I mean, he'll try to hit those talking points.
Kamala Harris actually acknowledged fentanyl coming across the border yesterday, which is kind of jaw-dropping. I am certain he's not going to talk about the drug problem, the fentanyl problem, the open border. That probably will not come up.
Oh, no, he's not going to. He wants that border open. He's not going to open himself up to any criticism. He might even try claiming that he's doing something about it. He'll maybe say nobody's cared about the border more than him ever. But I don't think he's going to draw a lot of attention to it because this is not a problem that he or his party want to address in any way, shape or form. So he's not going to open himself up to that.
You think he'll go after education in any way, John Hayward? Will education come up?
Yeah, absolutely. He knows the education system is under assault, deservedly so. It's about damn time. And I mean, I think his handlers know that the school choice movement is growing rapidly. The public discontent with public education is at all time highs and getting worse. So he'll jump in there and say that his opponents are enemies of education and they don't want your kids to learn. Maybe he'll say that they don't want your kids to learn real history. They want to learn white supremacist history or, you know, some nonsense like that. I think some of what he's going to do is going to be at least a veiled swipe at Ron DeSantis.
Book burning.
He's going to look at what DeSantis is doing. Yeah, book burning, book banning. You know, you can't say gay or whatever. I'm sure some of that's going to come up.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the cultural flashpoints will absolutely come up tonight. Count on it, right? Don't get mad because that's what's coming.
Yeah, yep, culture war is their thing. That's what they think saved them in the midterms. The real thing that saved them in midterms was ballot harvesting. It was their ability to go out and get people half asleep on their couch to scratch out a ballot and crayon. That's what saved them, and that's what's going to save them next time if they continue to do reasonably well. But you can't say that. I mean, you can't go into the State of the Union and trumpet the effectiveness of your ballot harvesting operation. So they're going to really push abortion and education and things like that. Culture war issues, hot button.
Is he going to try to make the case for raising the debt ceiling? Do you think? Do you think he can?
Or abolishing it. I wouldn't be surprised if part of his speech is saying that we just need to do away with it entirely, that there should be no limits on government spending ever again. I mean, that's what he does. That's his modus operandi.
Wow, remarkable. This spy balloon thing couldn't come at a worse time for him. How much time does he spend on it, do you think, if at all?
I really don't think he spends much on it. It's embarrassing. I don't know if he'll try pushing the three balloons lie, the Trump lie. That's got so many holes poked in it right now that I don't know if he wants to bring that deflating balloon into State of the Union. So I'd be curious to see if he tries to push that point. If he pushes it, then it means they've got something ready to go to try to at least defend it. And if he doesn't mention it, then you know they don't have anything that they can do to maintain that story.
John Hayward is excellent. National Security Deputy Editor at Breitbart. Read everything he writes. Follow him on Twitter if you're on Twitter, because every tweet is prophetic as well. Doc_0. We will watch tonight and see if your assessment is correct. I suspect it will be, as it usually is. Thank you, John.
Looking forward to seeing how our scorecards come out.
Bob Spinato is my dentist. He is a dear friend. He is an Eagles fan, and I don't hold that against him in this Super Bowl situation. No, he and I have been texting throughout the last couple of weeks, ever since we knew this matchup. Love Bob. Going to go see him very, very soon, as a matter of fact. I've kept him as my dentist no matter where I've gone. I've always said, Bob, as long as you're practicing, you're where I go. I mean, I have to go twice a year. Everybody should go twice a year. It's worth traveling, and I'm serious. He's worth the travel. If you want a cosmetic overhaul of your smile like I had, and those of you that wish, watch on Rumble or on YouTube, you can actually see my teeth. Bob installed these things, and I get compliments on them all the time. He's also the best general dentist I've ever experienced in my life. He's a dear friend, and I don't say that lightly, because if Bob hurt me or wasn't great at being a dentist, I mean, I've been talking about him since I started my show in Philadelphia. We certainly wouldn't be friends, and I wouldn't have had an over decade-long relationship talking about him on the show. I've never had a friend, an associate, a neighbor, a colleague. I've never had anybody go to Bob that I've sent to Bob and not come away glowing, gushing about him like I do. You'll see. You'll see the difference at Williamsburg Dental in Broomall, Pennsylvania, just off the Blue Route in Philadelphia. Easy to get to and worth, like I said, the trip for cosmetics. He is the best in the business. That's voted on by his peers regularly in dentistry. Make an appointment. He'll even give you a, at his cost, professional whitening. $200. It's normally $500 for podcast listeners, just $200. Call 610-353-2700. 610-353-2700 or williamsburg-dental.com. Steve Moore is our chief economist. He is the go-to source for all matters on money. He is the senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks. He counseled the Trump White House for quite a time in matters of the economy and the markets. And so tonight is the State of the Union address, Steve-O. And I don't know how many rooms you've ever been in when a president is trying to put together, or a team is trying to put together, remarks for a State of the Union, particularly as it relates to the economy. But the polling suggests, ABC News, Washington Post poll, Steve, that most Americans are not better off. They don't feel great about the state of the economy, among many other things. So he's going to try to do the same thing he always does, Steve, which we've talked about, which is, hey, I've reduced inflation and I've reduced the deficit. He's going to try. Are people going to buy it? Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. By the way, it sounds like you can't lose on Sunday. Either way, you're going to be happy campers. So,
yep.
Congratulations on both of your teams getting in the Super Bowl. That doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. It's exciting. And I really, it's the first time that I've ever, normally I'm either dispassionate about the Super Bowl or, you know, you've got one team that you really want to see win. This is a rarity to see two that you really, it won't hurt your feelings either way. Yeah.
Well, I'm a Bears fan. We still live on the 1985 Bears, which was, what, 30-some years ago. So anyway, still one of the greatest teams ever.
The Super Bowl shuffle. Ever. I remember that.
Jim McMahon and Walter Payton. So, look, I have in the room when the speechwriters are writing the speech on the State of the Union. And obviously, you want to tell the American people things are going fine and dandy. And, you know, under Reagan and Trump, it was that wasn't hard message to sell to people because things were going well in the country. But I saw the Washington Post poll. I saw another poll that just came out a few days ago that said that 61% of Americans rate the economy as bad. So it's a tough sell for the president to go in front of the American people and tell people how wonderful things are. Now, to give the president his due, we have a very strong job market. If you're looking for a job, this is about the best time ever to be looking for a job. So that's good news. You know, we have 10 million surplus jobs in this country. We have a low unemployment rate. And, you know, give the president his victory lap on that. But other than that, what do you talk about? You know, tell me what's going right in the country. Incomes are – I have a piece in the New York Post. I hope people will Google it and look it up. It's called The Six Lies That Joe Biden Will Tell the American People on in the State of the Union. And, you know, for example, let me just give you an example. Have you heard this line about how he has reduced the deficit by $1.4 trillion?
Loves to talk about reducing the deficit, yes.
He always talks about that. And so people understand he increased the budget deficit by up to $2.8 trillion his first year, which was an all-time, you know, record for the United States in terms of fiscal recklessness. Then $1.4 trillion last year, which is also near an all-time record, except for his own record. And he's saying he's reduced the deficit by $1.4 trillion when he's actually increased the debt by something like $4.2, $4.3 trillion. So, you know, those are the kinds of things he just fabricates the truth. Another one, you know, he keeps saying the other day he said he was asked about the inflation, right? And he said, oh, it's not my fault we have inflation. I inherited this. I'm like, inherited it? The inflation rate was 1.4% when you came into office, and you took it to 9%. How is that inheriting an inflation crisis? He created it.
He said, when asked yesterday, what's the risk of a recession, quote, still what it was, very low. I've believed it all along. So far, so good. Your response to that?
You know, I hope we avoid a recession. I hope he's right about that. I don't want to see a recession. Those are going to be very damaging. But for a lot of Americans, they feel like they've been in a recession for 3 years. I mean, under Biden, the average worker, you know, average family has lost about $3,000 or $4,000 in purchasing power. That is because inflation is rising faster than people's wages and their incomes. There was an article in CNBC yesterday that, you know, just made my mouth drop that said more and more Americans are buying their food at the dollar store because they can't afford to go to the grocery store.
Wow.
And by the way, it's not really the dollar store anymore. Now it's the $2 store because of inflation. And so that tells you a lot about the hardship. So I think the president is running a risk by saying how good things are when people aren't feeling it. Then he just sounds like he's delusional and out of touch. And by the way, yes, in the Washington Beltway, in the swamp, things are going well. You know, it's great here if you live in the swamp because we live off the rest of you all.
Let me go to the economic wunderkind of the White House, Brian Deese. He had some things to say yesterday. Number 46 here, if you please. We'll just go down the list. He had a few, and I'll just get your reaction to all of this. Let's listen in.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Well, on Friday morning when I was over with the president in South Court, he said this, so I will just say what he said on Friday, which is that the state of the economy is strong and that, you know, you see that in the lowest unemployment rate in 53 years. You see that in the most jobs created in the last 2 years in our country's history. You see that in historic progress in an equitable recovery. You see that in the wage growth that we have seen being disproportionately going to those in the lower half of the income distribution.
I don't know what any of that gobbledygook means, but do you care to respond?
On Friday morning when I was over with the president.
Yeah, so go ahead and respond to that first there, Steve-O.
Yeah. Well, what wage growth is he talking about? Yeah, has there been wage growth? Yeah, wages have risen by about 5%. That's a great number. Problem is, inflation has risen by 7 or 8%. So people are falling behind every month. They're getting poorer, not richer. And you can't spin this, Chris. You can't spin that. People realize it. They feel it in the pocketbook. You know, we had an item in our hotline today about people are racking up record amounts of credit card debt. We're acting like the federal government, which is borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. We're becoming debt nation, and those credit card bills have to be repaid. There was an article in Bloomberg that more Americans are having to take money out of their 401k plans to pay their bills. Well, Chris, Do you know what kind of penalty you pay if you take out money from a 401k plan early? So people are financially stressed out, I think. I mean, I see it all the time. I mean, you see it in the way people are taking on debt. You see it the way people are having cut back on the kinds of things that they can afford to buy. So I don't know. I just think when they talk like that, people are kind of wondering, well, gee, what country is he talking about?
How does again, I'll ask you because it just there's a disconnect. It still feels like I agree with you. People are stressed out. I know in my own home. I know mathematically. I feel it. We see it. The tangible dollars in my bank account are not going as far. We cannot afford to spend the money and purchase our purchase power is diminished. It's tangible. It's physical. You can see it. And so I know we're not alone. But I still marvel at this disconnect that, like you just said, the jobs market is robust. Like, I don't it would seem if people are really stressed and pinched, don't they go out and get jobs and work? How do you still have such a vast job market opening with people stretched so thin? It's weird.
Well, I think you know part of the answer to that because we've talked about it many weeks on your show, that we are still paying people a lot of money not to work. You know, that was the study we did at Committee to Unleash Prosperity that found that in many places like New Jersey, a family with two unemployed parents not working can make $80,000 a year and not work a single hour. So we've got to get back to work requirements. I believe in a safety net if somebody loses their job. But come on, we can't pay people not to work. So by the way, on that note, did you know, Chris, I mean, this is just something that sticks in my craw, that it's been 3 years now that the federal workforce has not been required to show up to work. And there is a bill this week to require there was a bill that was voted on either earlier this week or late last week. I forget when it was to say, OK, COVID's been over for 2 years. Time for everybody to get back on the job. And half of the Democrats in the House voted against that.
Yeah, look.
So this is just ripping off taxpayers.
Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., is begging Biden and the Congress to make federal employees come back because her city is economically floundering and so much business that depended on government traffic isn't happening.
Yep. Yeah. Now, here's the thing that's really interesting about it. First of all, it's a ripoff. I mean, I know people who live down the street from me. You know, they're working maybe 4, maybe 5 hours a week, and then they're driving the kids to school or going to their workout classes and da-da-da, and they're getting an a full-time paycheck. By the way, the average federal employee makes $100,000. It's one of the biggest ripoffs ever. And the most interesting thing about this is I'll bet most of your listeners didn't even know people aren't showing up for work because they don't do anything that's important. Right?
I know. I mean,
doesn't that tell you how irrelevant government is?
Yeah.
Maybe we should just get rid of them all. And if we don't even notice they're not working.
Let me quickly, because this will undoubtedly come out tonight. Biden will undoubtedly try to scare people into thinking that Republicans want to cut Medicare and Social Security. So Kevin McCarthy addressed this, number 51. Kevin McCarthy talked about this as he was discussing reining in spending. Listen.
Cuts to Medicare and Social Security, they are off the table. Defaulting on our debt is not an option. But neither is a future of higher taxes, higher interest rates, and an economy that doesn't work for working Americans. Debt limit debates have been used for nearly every successful attempt to reform federal spending in living history. Why? Because the problem only gets solved when both parties come to the table. But don't just take my word for it. Here's what then Vice President Biden said when he negotiated a debt limit increase with House Republicans in 2011. "You can't govern without negotiating," he said. Those are his words. That's what his sensible standard. And House Republicans are following it now.
So McCarthy's saying right off the top, cuts to Medicare and Social Security off the table. He has to do that because that's always what Democrats threaten. I'm sure Biden will again tonight anyway, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, by the way, I mean, I've been in this game a long time. I arrived in Washington in 1984, so almost, over 30 years. And Democrats have been using this line almost every year for 35 years. Oh, no, the Republicans don't want to cut Social Security and Medicare. They used it against Reagan. They used it against Bush. When Clinton was president, they used it. When Obama was president. I mean, how many times are they going to say this, Chris? I mean, I think the American people are onto this ruse. Look, I agree with every word that you just played from Kevin McCarthy. I'm not a huge Kevin McCarthy fan, but I think he's spot on. Look, the danger to our country is that we continue to borrow like this. I used this analogy last week on your show, but I'll say it again. We are a freight train that's speeding over a cliff, a financial cliff, and everyone knows it. And I don't know if it's going to happen next week or next month or next year or 2 years from now. It's going to happen if we continue to rack up $2 trillion of debt every year, year after year after year. So what's wrong with saying, look, we're not going to give you a credit card extension, Joe Biden, until you come up with a plan to reduce our debt? I think that makes a lot of sense. That's what a household would do. That's what a business would do, Chris.
Steve Moore is our chief economist. We'll have you back next week to grade this speech and see what he says. Thank you so much, my friend.
Okay, Chris, have a great day.
Oh, I love how well I'm sleeping on these MyPillow products. I really am. I thought it was kind of a cliche, frankly. I thought it was just, yeah, I know. Mike spends a lot of money advertising on Fox and on other radio shows, and I see him on Twitter. Everybody's talking about MyPillow and use the promo code. I don't go for that stuff. In fact, I don't like stuff that feels like everybody's doing it, so, you know. Okay, so sure, I'll get in on it too. I haven't worked with MyPillow until I started the podcast. And when Mike and MyPillow approached me to start talking about the products, I said, okay, let's order a few. So I did. I ordered my coffee, which I'm drinking this morning. Absolutely, I brewed a pot right here in my office this morning of it. But the night's sleep that I've been enjoying on these Giza Dream Sheets, Christine said to me again yesterday, unsolicited, I really love these sheets. I do too. They're soft as they can be. If you've heard him talk about them on the commercials on TV, laying on a MyPillow, a new MyPillow 2.0 with their new cooling technology, so you don't get hot on the thing. I sleep with one of those MyPillow body pillows. It's like a 5 foot pillow, which, you know, I'm a side sleeper, so you tuck that in between your legs, give it a good bear hug. It's just great for side sleeping. Personally, I love it. They have blankets. They have robes. MyPillow towels, which are great and absorbent. My dog, Dean, loves his MyPillow dog bed. Just about anything you can think of. I'm sorry to say, but I'm just going to say it. I love hearing that companies that have thrown Mike out of their stores are on borrowed time while Mike and MyPillow continue to thrive. And you can save big money on these really quality products, too. When you go to MyPillow.com, use my name, Chris Podcast specifically. That lets them know that you listen to the show, Chris Podcast. That saves you money on great products and lets them know that you listen to, which I really appreciate. A 10-year warranty on all these products, a 60-day money-back guarantee on all these products. Greatest customer service you're ever going to experience, too. 800-932-5056. That's 800-932-5056 or MyPillow.com. Yesterday, I came across this story. Headline, Forest Theater set for 1776 story of the Founding Fathers with a twist. Because, of course, if you loved the Broadway musical Hamilton, you'll want to see 1776. It tells the story of the Founding Fathers, but with a big twist. 1776 is being staged at the Forest Theater, just blocks away from where history actually happened in Philadelphia at Independence Hall. The show focuses on the events leading up to the creation and signing of the Declaration of Independence. So how are the woke going to ruin it? You already see this coming from downtown, don't you? Jeffrey Page, a University of the Arts alum, is co-directing the show with a multicultural cast of artists who identify as female, non-binary, or trans. It's a reimagining, says Paige. This is for people who are interested in going on a very imaginative journey of what if? What if we told the story through voices that weren't allowed in the room during this movement, says actor Sav Souza. They play Dr. Josiah Bartlett of New Hampshire. That's exactly how this news story is written. Actor Sav Souza, they play Dr. Josiah Bartlett of New Hampshire. The lead character of the show, John Adams, is being played by a black woman, says Page. In 1776, literally, there were trans people, says Souza. Literally, there were trans people. How do we know that exactly? How do we know there were trans people in 1776? Do we know that? I missed that. Souza says, by putting their body in the story, to me, it feels like an act of protest. The show hit Broadway last fall, and the Forest Theater is the first stop on its national tour. It makes us look at history through a very different and interesting lens, says Page, who also choreographed the show. It is the Broadway debut for Souza, who also graduated from the University of Arts in Philadelphia. I think that we've created something that is really special and really effective. And I hope that people will come and will feel seen. While the show wrestles with the very foundation of our nation, it's also a musical comedy. These people are unintentionally ridiculous. They think they're doing something profound and artistic, and this is the stupidest, most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. People that refer to themselves as they, doing a musical comedy as transgendered black women as the founding fathers. This is absurd. And they're deadly serious about it. They think they're artistes. They're clowns. They're reprobate clowns. Who desperately need the approval and affection of their parents, I suspect, and more than a little Jesus, but that's an aside. I want Philadelphians to be proud, says Paige. We have the ability to jump inside of narratives and change them. What? Changing narratives? You're telling the story of the nation's founding, and there's a narrative you want to change by casting John Adams as a black woman. The only narrative you're changing is that the United States, from the time of its founding to today, has gone completely off the rails, and that those men who would have given their blood and treasure and land and families and lives for our freedoms, were they alive today, they wouldn't know what to make of this foreign planet they gave of themselves to save. That's they would not understand it. Remarkable. Also, I would call your attention to something that I happened to come across, and it was actually courtesy of Tucker's show last night. I didn't know he'd written this, and I may spend some more time with it in the future. A guy called Kevin Bass, who is a medical school student in Texas. He's in his seventh year of med school. And his piece in Newsweek is headlined, "It's Time for the Scientific Community to Admit We Were Wrong About COVID." This is the kind of thing that I think, and I know that people like Naomi Wolf and others that I've had on the show disagree. They think the human rights violations that have happened in the era of COVID are too egregious. There can be no apology. There can be no forgiveness. I don't know that I share that point of view, because I don't know that everyone in our midst was supportive of the wholesale robbing us of our freedoms. But I do believe that there was a cult-like commitment to defeating COVID or staving off COVID by mask wearing and social isolation and stuff that a lot of people were really cleaving to wrongly. And it became sort of an obsessive pseudo-religion for them. And this guy, Kevin Bass, has written this piece. It's dated January 30th. If you want to go back and read it for yourself, I hope you will. It's time for the scientific community to admit we were wrong about COVID. As a medical student and researcher, he writes, "I staunchly supported the efforts of the public health authorities when it came to COVID-19. I believe that the authorities responded to the largest public health crisis of our lives with compassion, diligence, and scientific expertise. I was with them when they called for lockdowns, vaccines, and boosters, and I was wrong. We in the scientific community were wrong, and it cost lives. I can see now that the scientific community, from the CDC to the WHO to the FDA and their representatives, repeatedly overstated the evidence and misled the public about its own views and policies, including on natural versus artificial immunity, school closures, disease transmission, aerosol spread, mask mandates, vaccine effectiveness and safety, especially among the young. All of these were scientific mistakes at the time, not in hindsight. At the time, not in hindsight. One more time. All of these were scientific mistakes at the time, not in hindsight. Amazingly, some of these obfuscations continue to the present day. Skipping ahead to his conclusion. My motivation for writing this is simple. It's clear to me that for public trust to be restored in science, scientists should publicly discuss what went right and what went wrong during the pandemic and where we could have done better. It's okay to be wrong and admit where one was wrong and where one was learned. That's a central part of the way science works, yet I fear that there are too many entrenched in groupthink and too afraid to publicly take responsibility to do this. Solving these problems in the long term requires a greater commitment to pluralism and tolerance in our institutions, including the inclusion of critical, if unpopular, voices. Intellectual elitism, credentialism, and classism must end. Restoring trust in public health and our democracy depends on it. Brilliant and bravo from Kevin Bass. This piece dated January 30th again. It's in Newsweek called "It's Time for the Scientific Community to Admit We Were Wrong About COVID." Head to the Harumph Society. I'll be offering my first rebuttal to the State of the Union tonight.
The Chris DeGaulle Show Podcast.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.